Okay, being that Pesach is rapidly coming, I decided we'll talk about something to do with Pesach. No, seriously, the beginning of the parasha, which itself is interesting, where this week's parasha begins and where last week's ends. We spent some time last week, with the end of last week's parsha, things didn't work out so well. Moshe's not all that pleased. And God basically says, well, wait till you see what I have up my sleeve. V'deber l'kim Moshe v'yomei lov ani Hashem v'yomei lov Avraham Yitzchak v'yakov v'kel shakai v'shmi Hashem l'nodat v'lehem, and so on. And God, you know, is not backing down by saying, or in a sense he's saying to Moshe, don't get so worked up about what you perceive as the momentary setback. The gam hakimoti et briti itam lethet lehem eretz kanan et eretz mugurehem ashagaruba. Don't worry, I'm going to keep the covenant. They'll get the land. But gam ani shamati nakatam bnei Yisrael sheb mitzrayim mavidim otam v'ezkorit briti, and I hear the cry of the Jewish people, and I will keep the covenant, which is the second time he stressed the covenant. L'chein amor l'vnei Yisrael, and therefore, this is what you should go and say. So therefore, even though there was this initial setback, even though things are not going the way that they should be, God says, don't worry, I'm on it. And then he says, this is what you should say. Here's the instruction. And now you can begin with source number one. L'chein amor l'vnei Yisrael, ani Hashem, Votseti etchem mitachat sivotam imitraim, vihitzalti etchem meavodotam, vegaalti etchem bezroa nutuya, uvishvatim gdolim. Vilakachti etchem lilaam, vaiti lachem lelokim, vayadatim kinesham alokechem, hamotzi etchem mitachat sivotam. Now, these two verses together are generally known in a specific way. How are they known? As the arba lashonot shel geula, haveti. Maybe we'll have time to get to haveti. Look at source 14, the Torah Tamima on this pasuk. He said there are shlosha bipasuk zeh. There are three of the terms are in the first verse, v'chad b'pasuk haba, and there's one term in the following verse, u'v'chol ha'poskim v'hamifarshim v'sifrei agada shuv'a d'rashazu huva b'lashon k'neged arba l'shonot sh'geula. And he goes, in all the sources you look at, you'll see that this teaching is always mentioned as the four l'shonot, and I guess if you have a Torah Tamim at home, you can add to the sign Jane as well, not just all of the books. But then he points out that it's not the way that it's mentioned in all the places. Now, when he says kol haposkim, what he means by poskim is secondary sources. He doesn't mean primary sources. Because if you look at the primary sources, the fact is really the opposite. It's not necessarily going to say lishonot gula. Now, in case you haven't at all understood what it is that I'm trying to say, let's take a look at the way that the teaching is mentioned in two different places. First, start with source 5, because that's what you already know. And we'll start on the top of page 2, Rav Huna b'shem Rav Bina, k'neged arba l'shonot shel ge'ula. Sh'ne'emar b'mitzrayim v'otzeiti v'yotzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti. That we drink four cups of wine on Pesach, k'neged the four lashonot, the four terminologies, or the four articulations of redemption. Now, if you notice, first of all, I'm not going to translate what k'neged means. I'll translate arba, means four, lashonot means, I already gave, what? Language, formulations, articulations, shel ge'ula. But the word ge'ula over here, what does ge'ula mean? Ge'ula will translate as redemption. But of course, you'll notice that ge'ula is one of the four. So what exactly does this mean? When it says there's four languages of redemption, shenemru v'hutzeiti, v'hutzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. So the four are v'hotzeti, which means I will take out, v'itzalti, I will save, ga'alti, I will redeem, v'lakachti, I will take. Now, what exactly is the difference between those four? Now, in this source, what do you see? You see that the four are four lishonot shel geula, which would sound, and this is, I think, what the Torah Tanim was alluding to, it would sound that there are four synonyms, which all mean the same thing. And if they all mean the same thing, what's the result going to be? The result's going to be that you're going to do the same thing four times afterwards. What's the same thing that we're going to do afterwards? We'll drink four cups of wine, which means essentially the four cups are the same. And that the fact we'll drink four cups is because there's four elements of the redemption, or the redemption is stated in four different ways, but it means four lashonot shel geula. So what is the common denominator of all four, according to this? That all of these are geula. Okay, all of these are redemption. But again, you already sense a little bit of a difficulty. What's the difference in the words? What do the words mean? What is the essence of the geula which is different? Geula is one of the four. What do the other three mean? And do they really all mean the same thing? And if they all meant the same thing, then why did they just say geula or goel four times in a row? Now, what he was alluding to is that he says, if you look at all the poskim and so on, and again, it's very interesting sometimes to see how ideas travel through sources, which means you can have a particular idea which is not necessarily all that popular among primary sources, but when you get to secondary sources, it becomes the dominant opinion. Why is that? I can't possibly explain it to you. In last week's Parsha, I mean, everybody knows that because of three things, Am Yisrael was saved from Egypt. If you saw, I wrote something about this, right? Go find that. Go find that primary source that says it, you'll have a very hard time. So if you'll tell me another, but Rashi says it, correct, Rashi says it, but where did Rashi get it from? There are lots of sources that says because of four things. But where are the three? And the four things which are there are not identical to the three things. Again, I'm not going to say anything more about that, just to use that as an example. No, that's a good question. Primary would be a Midrash, a Gemara, Mishnah, and so on. What I would call primary rabbinic literature. You want a time frame on that? I would say anything till the year between 500 to 800.
So Rashi is a
secondary source. Because Rashi will admit to you that he uses the primary sources. I mean, the whole thing about studying Rashi is trying to compare what Rashi actually says with the source that he got it from. And one second. And Rashi, for example, is 95% cutting and pasting and slight reforming. So then you have to see, okay, where did he cut and paste from, and what did he do with that little sleight of hand? And if anybody here ever studied with Nechama Leibowitz, you'll know that that's what she spent most of her time in trying to show us, is to see primary source, see Rashi, now look, what did Rashi do? Not, let's just open up Rashi by itself and say, oh, look what an interesting thing Rashi said. You can only appreciate the interesting thing in Rashi after you compared it to what Rashi's primary sources were. Otherwise, you're completely missing the, at least most of the message. Yes? Tanakh is even more primary. Tanakh is the source, yeah. It sounds like a book. Yeah.
I wanted to point out, though, that four cups of wine are never the same because it's progressive. You don't feel the same after the first one cup.
Sounds like you speak from experience.
There's a movement in drinking wine. It's not like eating four.
I'll have to explore that and to see.
Yeah, tell me how you feel.
Isn't it?
Okay. No, of course. No. The truth, of course. Of course. Correct. Of course. Correct. Of course. I was setting you up when I said that the four are the same, and I knew that you would respond because they're not the same. They look the same. Four times you say Bor Pri Agafin, but are they really the same? And by the way, what would then be more important? This one is probably better. What would be more important is then how do the four lashonot relate to the four different usages of them? But that's your homework. But I don't think I'm going to get that far today. So how much of a progression they are is something that we also hopefully have to look into. Listen, if I knew how the shiur was going to end, I would tell you if we're going to do that. I just don't know. But that is an important that is an important observation. See, on the other hand, if you look at source number two, and this is absolutely a primary source, and before I read source number two, I do have to make an observation. This idea that the four cups of wine are connected to the four Lashonot HaGeula is not written in the Talmud Bavli. Okay? The Talmud Bavli knows we drink four cups of wine, at least. The Talmud Bavli understands that the four cups of wine are a mitzvah midurabanan, and I don't believe anybody has ever debated that point, that it is in fact a durabanan, a rabbinic law, which means eating the Korban Pesach, that's a Torah law, right? Eating the matzah is a Torah law. Eating the maror is a Torah law, although, to be honest, today, eating the maror independently of the Korban Pesach is not a Torah law. Matzah independent of the Korban Pesach is, and this goes to very technical reading of a whole bunch of verses, and in what context does it speak of eating maror? Only in the context of eating the Korban Pesach. In what context does it speak of eating matzah? Also independently, so therefore there's also independent mitzvah. But I can assure you that there is no mitzvah from the Torah to be drinking four cups of wine, which then also becomes a very interesting thing. Why the four cups of wine? And by the way, for that matter, you can get into a whole secondary issue, and that is, why is the number four considered to be such a primary number when it comes to the Seder? And it is. Now the question is that something which is completely, is it completely artificial, or is it something which is an essential part of the Seder? Which means the way that our Haggadah ends up today, you really do have fours in all kinds of places. If you wanted to, we can open up the Haggadah and see how many of those fours are really debatable, if there really are four, or were four, or should be four, or always were four. No, I'm saying, for example, the questions. You can get anything from three to five, so I guess the average of between three to five ends up being four. But and we can go on. Even if you want to say, can I get Arabban and Dibur Torah, go look in the Torah, it only speaks of three of them. Why? Because the Einu De'elishol doesn't ask, right? So I'm saying that there are all kinds of things that we end up with four, where you don't necessarily have to end up with four unless somebody really had this desire to end up with four. And more importantly, the four cups of wine become the defining part of the Haggadah. Again, there's two ways of dividing the Haggadah. One way is Kadesh Urechatz Yachartet, what we call the Simanim. And if you go through the Simanim, so then each Siman creates a new part of the Haggadah. That's one way of dividing it. And then you divide it into all of those. How many of those? 15? Then you have 15 different parts of the Haggadah. The other way of dividing the Haggadah is dividing it into the cups of wine, and then you end up having four parts, and each part is a clearly defined separate part. And again, it's not so simple that you'll have one meal and you say Baruch Pri HaGafen four times. That's not a very simple thing. Start thinking about the laws of brachot. Why are you making another bracha? So apparently, and by the way, that's also not a simple point in terms of halacha and different customs, Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, and I'm being very superficial right now, but the fact that our custom is to take one sitting and divide into four different cups, and if you realize, what are the problematic ones? The first one's not a problem. The second one is a problem. The third one's not a problem. And the fourth one may not be as well, because the third one connects to Birkat HaMazon. What's the fourth doing there? And if there's a fifth? And so on. The second one is the one that's the problem. So therefore, the second one is really the one for the Haggadah itself. But, as I said, that's what divides and breaks up the night. Now, having said that the Bavli, the Talmud Bavli, which for us is the more important Gemara, does not speak about why you drink the four cups. It's a din d'rabbanan. That's the way the Seder was put together. On the other hand, the Yerushalmi offers an explanation why you drink the cups, but let's be honest, it doesn't offer one explanation. It offers a whole bunch of explanations, which is very clear that as far as the Yerushalmi is concerned, what's the fact that we know? The fact is we drink four cups of wine. Why we drink four cups of wine, that's debatable, but that Yerushalmi brings in a number of different opinions. Let's look at source number two. Minayin la'arba kosot, how do you know that you drink four cups? Which means, again, what do you know? You drink four cups. From where do we see that you drink four cups? Rabbi Yochanan Meshem Rabbi Benaya, keneged arba ge'ulot. Now, this is interesting because he doesn't say kineged arba lishonot shel geula. He doesn't use the phrase over here that there are four expressions of geula. What does he say? There are four geulot. There's four redemptions that took place. Now, to say that four redemptions took place is very different from saying there's four ways of articulating it. Okay, that's what the Torah Tumimah noticed, and therefore he's was a little perturbed that all the later sources keep saying arba lashonot geula, while if you look at probably the most important primary source, would say arba geulot. There's now a completely different reason. You look at the story of with Paro, you'll find that there are four times this coast there. Because Paro be a dive, which means it's the dream of the Sar HaMashkin. What does the dream of the Sar HaMashkin have to do with Pesach night? So you'll have to work hard in order to try to figure out what exactly the connection is, although the reality is that's the very beginning of the slavery. The very beginning of the slavery, because Yosef now is a slave, and not all, the rest. So you have slavery in a microcosm. Later on, you'll have all of Am Yisrael, and therefore when we finally leave, we talk about the very beginning. But what's interesting is that it's the beginning of Yosef's slavery, but this is also the beginning of Yosef's Ge'ula, because this is the beginning of Yosef being able to get out, so therefore we go back to the very beginning of the slavery, the very beginning of the Ge'ula, which therefore, in a sense, would be foreshadowing for the way that the eventual Ge'ula will take place. What's better with this interpretation than the four Ge'ulot? Why is this one better? Zug Besser. No, why is it better?
Gives us hope.
No. Yes.
There are four different things that make sense that they're different as opposed to being the same.
Kosod. This talks about wine. Right? What's the connection between four languages of Ge'ula or four Ge'ulot versus four times it uses the word kos? It's talking about wine. Which means if you want a source that you drink four cups of wine, what's better? Four times that it talks about some kind of redemption, or four times in the story it talks about wine. Right? So you understand that there is nonetheless a certain logic in this. Again, what's the Yerushalmi doing? It's working backwards. This is called Monday morning quarterback learning. Right? What are they doing? They know that you have four cups. What do you have to figure out? Now, where do those four cups come from? So, what do you do? So you start opening up the whole story of going down to Egypt. Where do you start from? I guess you start from Yosef. And you look and say, oh, look at that. The word kos is written four times. The word kos is written four times in that dialogue. So now you have your four cups. That's what this opinion of Yerushalmi did. Is this really any worse than the one? Why is this worse than the one that you know? Because you didn't know it. If you knew it, then you would have been very happy with this. Right? The thing is that all of you already knew that there's four lishonot shegula, and that's why we have four cups. So being that that's the default in your head, so that's obviously why it makes more sense. The Yerushalmi's explanation over here is no worse than the other explanation. Yeah.
Why would the Yerushalmi be different from the
Rashi? Is this a general question? The Bavli and the Yerushalmi have certain parallels to it. Both of them start with the Mishnah, which is 98% the same. So they both have the same, they have the same Torah. The same Torah, same Mishnah. Then you have discussions taking place in different academies. And there's movement going on in the discussions, which means that a question could be raised in Israel in the year 350 and be answered in Bavel in the year 375, because that question, or and the other way around. And by the way, sometimes you'll have what's called an artificial Gemara, where you have a question is raised in 350 in Bavel, and the answer was given in 325. But you still need to put the answer and the question together, right? I remember. More or less. Whenever someone would come over to my father and say, I have a question, what would he say? I have an answer. Let's see if they match, right? So that's sometimes what's taking place. You have a question, you have an answer, but then you have a very interesting and complicated editorial process. The differences between the Bavli and Yerushalmi most likely come down to editing. So the Bavli is edited at a much later point in time and over a much longer period of time. While the Yerushalmi was edited anything from around the year, I'm guessing 380 to probably around 420. And the Bavli is from the year 500 onward. And it's quite possible that the impetus for the editing of the Yerushalmi was the destruction of the Jewish community up north due to an earthquake. Before you bought your houses, you checked if you're on a fault over here, or you didn't... What? Oh, we're all on a fault. So did you realize that every 120 years or so there have been earthquakes in the area? Chas v'shalom, due point. Anyway, there is a fault, and every now and then earthquakes take place, and the north was destroyed around the year 420, and that's very likely was the impetus to end the academies. I'll just make one observation about this, and then we'll continue on. If you look through Jewish history, catastrophes breed collecting. Mm-hmm. Catastrophes breed collecting of ideas. Okay? Peace, tranquility, breeds creativity. Which means that there could be really two basic ways to learn, or two basic approaches. One is collecting ideas from all over, and the other would be sitting and creating new ideas. So what you'll notice is that catastrophe breeds collecting. And the reason for this is probably a very simple social psychology, and that is that when there's catastrophe, you get the sense that everything is being lost, and you need to collect, you need to gather together, you don't want ideas to be lost. And when you live in peace and tranquility, you don't feel the same need to go and collect, and then you feel a little bit freer and you're able to create. And you can go now and you can chart through Jewish history, look at the various great collections that took place, and then see to what extent they're connected to catastrophes. Whether it's true or not, it's interesting. Therefore, the suggestion that the Yerushalmi may be connected to the destruction of... Look, the Mishnah is most likely a result of the Chorban of Bayit Sheni. Mm-hmm. Right? Chorban Bayit Sheni, and then you start collecting the Mishnah, and then the publication of the Mishnah is probably the result of the Hadrianic persecution and the failure of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. At that point, you collect and publish. The Yerushalmi, as I suggested already, the Shulchan Aruch is most likely directly connected to the Spanish Inquisition. And that... It could be. No, but I'm saying the Shoah, absolutely. In the 50 years after the Shoah, you find relatively very little creativity. Very, very little creative ideas. So much so that there... That, correct. No, I'm saying so... All right. So much so... Yeah, right. But I'm saying that's what takes place when you have this sense, oh, they were so great in the last generation, but that happens with catastrophe. They're all gone. All that we can possibly do is collect previous ideas. But when you have times of people living in peace and tranquility, then you find people much more comfortable, and then you find more new ideas being put down. As I said, this is a general thing to think about. I hope that answered your question about the Yerushalmi. No, not at all. Not at all. But that doesn't make a difference. One second. Before you say anything else, there is in the Bavli a great deal of Eretz Yisrael material. There is in the Yerushalmi a great deal of Bavel material, which means the core material goes back and forth. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who live in Eretz Yisrael, are all over the Bavli and all the Yerushalmi. Right? Rava, who lives in Bavel, is all over the Yerushalmi, which means the ideas are traveling. The main difference is the editing process. Now, how much that has to do with... That has probably more to do with the difficulty in reading it. It's not as smooth as the Bavli is. The Bavli is much smoother. When somebody learns the Bavli a lot, you can anticipate what the Gemara is going to say, what it's going to answer, how it's going to bring proof, and how it's going to then question proof and move on. It's almost a logical format. As I said, it's not every passage of Gemara is the same, but as you learn, you get very, very used to it. The Yerushalmi... You would get lost on, because there are questions that aren't asked, and just answers are presented, and if you didn't realize what's going on, then you say, what did one line have to do with the other? Because it's not as smooth of an editing process. The issue between the difference of the material and this particular kind of question, why does this have this not, is much more difficult to answer. It has to do with a certain person who asked the question, and that teaching made the cut. Not every teaching makes the cut in the Bavli. Not every discussion will bring in every piece of information, which means there is, and then you always have to question, now, if this information isn't there, does it mean it's rejected, or does it mean that it just wasn't included? We would have no reason to believe a teaching like this is rejected. Generally, the approach is that if there is something in the Bavli and the Rishami, we would follow the Bavli. If you have a teaching in the Rishami which is not contradicted by the Bavli, then you would follow the Rishami on it. That would be the general approach. Correct. Right? I mean, it would probably, you can also do a law review, that you have issues that are raised, things which are discussed, things, articles which are written. Now you can ask, hold it, why in the world did the law review in Yale not have all the same material as Harvard? They're dealing with the same primary material, they're dealing with the same statutes, the same laws, the same constitution. Why do they have different discussions in them? It's because different things interested different people, and it's not even a fair question when you realize what the process is. So there'll be plenty of comments and teachings which are absolutely the same. There'll be plenty of teachings which made the cut in one place and didn't make it in the other, and this is one of them. There's no evidence that the Bavli argues that there are four cups of wine, unless we maybe get to the end. Okay, let's continue. So the Rishami gave the second, and there's a third suggestion afterwards. Reb Levi Amar Keneged Arba Malchiot. Why do we have four cups? Because of the four kingdoms. Verabonin Amar Keneged Arba Kosot Shapornet Shekadosh Atid Lahashkot Etumot Olam. The four cups is something in the future, which means you have over here in this Rishami as many reasons as you can possibly want for the four cups. But what's interesting about the Rishami is that one thing is quite clear. What's that? There are four cups. And by the way, that point is pretty obvious in at least the Mishnah level and the basic discussions in the Bavli. It says, the first Mishnah, Arvei Pesachim, starts off that even an Ani B'Yisrael doesn't have less than four cups of wine. Right? Everyone needs to have four cups of wine. You know the famous story with Reb Chaim? Rabbi Soloveitchik liked the story. This is his grandfather, Reb Chaim. Once somebody came to him and asked if he can use... and asked if he can use milk for the four cups of wine. So Reb Chaim went in his pocket and gave the guy a great deal of money. Let's just say a bottle of wine would cost, $20. So he gave him significantly more than that. So some students were watching and said, listen, when the guy walked in, he says, Rebbe, we understand that you gave him wine because he didn't have it. Why did you give him so much money? So he said, if the guy's asking you if you can use milk, obviously he didn't have any meat for the Seder either. So I gave him enough money to buy the wine and to buy the meat, which I thought, you know, is the perfect description of what a rabbi is supposed to be, which means you don't answer the question that they ask you, because just answer, you try to solve the problem. And to try to solve the problem, you sometimes need a little intelligence to understand exactly what the problem is, because someone else could have easily said no, or someone else could have said no, you're an idiot, like, don't you know the Mishnah? So the answer is no, you can't, and then let's look at the problem, but not the specifically overall problem. If a guy's already using milk, you realize more likely allergic to milk. Okay. So let's try to continue then. So now, these four expressions, lashonot, or types of ge'ula, what are they? Where do they come from? What are they about? So maybe the best thing for us to do is to go back and read them again, understand what the words actually say, and then maybe we'll have a chance of understanding them. Back in the first source, L'chein emor l'vnei Yisrael ani Hashem v'hotzeiti etchem. What does v'hotzeiti mean? So if you just look at the word hotzeiti by itself, what does it mean? Take out. So now, if you don't go any further, what do you think it means? You think it means that God is taking the Jews out of Egypt. Right? Now, what does it really say? So what are you extricating them from? So it's interesting. It didn't say the slavery. It didn't say from Avdut. What does it say? From the suffering. So let's keep that in mind. So the first thing is, the first aspect of Ge'ula is that God is promising that he's going to take them out from the Sivlot Mitzrayim.
Which could mean that you could stay in Mitzrayim, but in a different context, so that there's no suffering.
Right. So again, that's what I'm saying. Let's read the... I know it's revolutionary, but let's read the words and see what they actually say, and then we'll try to understand things. So the first thing, Vahotzeiti, I am absolutely sure that there are people who see, four Lashonot Shel Golah, Vahotzeiti, and they start talking about the significance of leaving Egypt. The only problem is it's not what it says. Okay? I'm just saying the simplest level of pshat, Vahotzeiti, means taking them out of what? Of suffering. Not of Egypt, and not necessarily taking them out from slavery. Next level is, I will save you from avodah. So the pshat of avodah would most likely mean from servitude. V'ga'alti etchem bizroa netuya uvishvatim gdolim. And I will say, and I will redeem you, and here it's with an outstretched arm, and shvatim gdolim. What does shvatim gdolim mean? Great. Shvatim. Judgments, with great judgments. Right? What are our great judgments over here? Okay. And then v'lakachti itchem li la'am. And then I will take you for an am. Now, what is your v'yiti lechem elokim v'yadatem ki ani Hashem lekechem otzi etchem mitachat tzavot Mitzrayim. One second. Which really did take us very back to the beginning. So you do see some kind of a combination over here. Excuse me.
Why is three of them in one pasuk and another one, the fourth one is separate?
No, a lot of people talk about that. You want an easy answer?
What are they allowing to give us?
I don't know.
Well, they actually didn't want but,
I don't know.
That's
also possible. In terms of the halacha, you're not allowed to drink between the third and the fourth cup. Okay, does that help you? Do you think over here it's most likely a separate thought, but we need to understand what levelakachti means. So let's back up one step.
The fourth one, the pasuk of levelakachti, goes back to the first.
Correct. That's what I just said. It goes back and it seems to be tying it up and really much more all inclusive. What does levelakachti mean? Let's go backwards. You want to go backwards? You want to go from the beginning? Levelakachti means to take out, to remove. From a situation, Hotzeiti can mean one thing, but lakachti is. So, what are you thinking? Something just came to your mind, right? Marriage. Marriage comes to mind. Ki yikach ish isha, right? The idea is one of marriage, so that's very interesting because, as we just heard that bat kol over there, that Har Sinai is compared to a marriage. But now you may have the support of where that idea first comes from. That if the idea of lakachti etchem li la'am, right? Right. V'lakachti lechem li la'am, v'yiti lechem lechem. That sounds very much like a marriage. That's not Eretz Yisrael. V'lakachti etchem li la'am. Right. So the Lashon
Lakachti.
Okay, correct. V'lakachti li la'am, v'yiti lechem lelokim. That this sounds very much like a proposal, like a proposition. Right. This is words of love. You will be for me like this. I will be for you. This is entering into a form of relationship. And again, knowing that the word lakach kicha is one which is used within marriage, now you may understand the undercurrent of why very often Har Sinai is considered to be a marriage situation. Again, there are vows which are taken, and so on. I mean, there's a lot to be said, but. But you do get that connotation ready from this verse. Now,
it's very interesting because they said in Har Sinai the mantle was on top of their head, and if they didn't take it,
a shotgun wedding.
And over here it says we were teaching a ten metacha. The situation you were under that mountain, and I took you out of it. And it's not the other way around. That once we receive them, the mountain was gonna. If we don't receive them, the mountain is gonna fall.
Okay, good. Let's now think a second if there are various stages of the redemption. And again, this is stages of redemption, and each one independently is a redemption, which means are at this point, again, just by reading the words, are we more likely to understand this as this four different ways of saying the same thing, or are these, in terms of the pshat, four different things being taught? So, do I have to? Right. It seems very clear that this is in fact four different things, different stages. Now, why were there be four different stages? So then the thought that comes to mind is, let's go and make a comparison between the leaving of Egypt and when God actually told Avram about going down into Egypt. Look at source number 7. V'yihi ha-shemesh levo v'tardima naflal Avram v'nei ema chashecha gdula nofelat alav v'yom al Avram yodea teda ki ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem. Now I gave that away by bolding that. Ger be'eretz lo lahem is already a state of discomfort. It's already a state of galut. It's a state of angst, of not feeling at home, not being at home, not feeling comfortable. Right, so that's the first stage. Ger yel bezarcha be'eretz lo lahem. First stage. Second stage. Ve'avadum. What does ve'avadum mean? In slavery. Now, is that the same as being in a foreign land? No, being a foreign land means out of your land. What does ve'avadum mean? It means that you've lost certain freedom and enslaved. What's the next word? Vinuotam. What does vinuotam mean? To oppress or to abuse. Now, is that the same as avdut or gerut?
No.
So right over here, you've already seen three different stages, and each one of them is going to necessitate a type of a geula in order to be saved from this, which means you have the, you know, by the way, one of the, I don't remember who this was. Was it Yonatan Eifshitz, maybe? One of the commentaries says, God says be 400 years, and they only end up saying 210 years. So you know, Chishev Etzaketz and so on, says no. Is that God also said V'inuotam. So God said there would be X amount of Inui. So the Egyptians were very efficient at what they did. Right. So in 210, they did 400. That means that we got to the amount of the Inui that God had said that we were going to get to, but they did it quicker, so therefore we had to leave quicker. And by the way, that's not such a bad explanation. If you really think about it, it's not such a bad explanation. Why we got to the point that, what do they say? Kill all the males, right, and so on. We got to the point that if God doesn't take us out, there's no more Jewish people. Which means, what exactly is the Inui? And I want to go the other way around as well. We have over here what we've already noticed, three different stages. To be out of your land, to be a ger be'eretz lo lahem. We have a stage of avdut. We have a stage of Inui. It's abuse. Inui is abuse. Which means you could be out of your land, it doesn't mean you're abused. You can be a slave, and it doesn't mean you're abused. Although, I'm sure there's somebody speaking this week about Martin Luther King Day and talking about slavery and so on.
So far, it's the reverse of the order.
You see an exact reverse?
Well, so far, because Oni is suffering. Abuse is suffering.
Yeah, look at the last page. Look at the last page. I try to line it up on the last page.
No, but I see Gary. I see Gary. A stranger is being the opposite of the marriage, where marriage comes together as one, and a Gary is totally separate.
The opposite
of
infidelity. Once you're married,
you're stranger. Yeah. So listen. That's the fun thing. Anybody can say whatever they want. Friday night, by the table, it's yours. You know. No. Right. You could say. So now we need to go back and to see exactly. I put that there for myself to be able to try to work that out and to visualize it. Normally, when I do things like that, I don't end up putting them on the page. But over here, I thought that maybe it would help you as well, just to be able to try to work it out. What? Ah, so good. Let's go back again to source number 7. So we're up to V'inuotam, Arbama Od Shana. V'gam et ha-goy asher ya'avodu dan anochi. Ah, so right. So now you see the shvatim dolim, right? Because the dan anochi works out very nicely with that. V'acharechen yetzu b'ruchush gadol. Is that a punishment, or that's or that's already something else? That's a true pattern. Okay. So if that's the case, ignore the Rechush Gadol, then what are you up to? No. How do you have five? Ger, avdut, inui, v'gamet agoye sher yavodu dan anochi. Okay. Take a look at the Sforno in source number 8. You'll see he was trying to do some of this. Hotzeiti is that from the day that the makot began, then so he says it's the slavery ends. So he understands. And by the way, this is not as sharp with the pshat as we were, all with all due respect and so on to the Sforno. He's connecting v'hitzalti, v'hotzeti. What does hotzeti say? Misivlut. It didn't say me'avdut. What was the next word? V'hitzalti me'avdut. So he understands v'hitzalti me'avdut means to leave Egypt. That's really saving from slavery. As I said, it's not 100% sharp, but it makes him happy. V'ga'alti. Now, again, what did the pasuk say regarding v'ga'alti? V'ga'alti etchem bizroon et hiyav v'shvatim gdolim. So what is ga'alti now? Outstretched arm, shvatim gdolim, there's a judgment taking place. What? It's more than the makot. The judgment, meaning, when is the judgment is when, which is when?
Yamsuf.
This is Yamsuf. And also the outstretched arm and so on gives you this feeling of Yamsuf. So, v'ga'alti b'tfiyat ha-metzrayim b'yam. So that I think is a, again, he doesn't spell it out for us, because God outstretched his arm and he struck the water and so on. That's really where you see that phrase being used. And the Tviat Mitzrayim, for our, again, he didn't connect it with the Brit Bein HaBetarim, but that would seem to be clear. The Sifte Kohen in source 9, the only thing that he did was a little different, and let me just first explain why he did it, and then we'll see what he did. There could be confusion between the Vahotzeti and the Hitzalti. Why? And you already saw just now the Sforno had a hard time with that. Why would you have a hard time? Because it's Otseti mitzivlot mitraim, vitzalti miavodotam. So you would think that sivlot and avodotam are the same thing. What do we all now know that apparently no one else knows? What do we all know?
Work doesn't mean suffering.
That you have avdut and then inui. Where do you have that? Back in the Brit Bein HaBetarim. That's not the same thing. And that fits in very nicely with over here. Now, as I said, if everyone else would have said that, it would have made it very easy. I'm not saying no one said it, but if they're having difficulty with trying to define the difference between Hotseiti mitachat sivlot mitzrayim, I'm going to take you out from the pain of Egypt, v'itzalti mi'avodotam. So, but if I already took you out of the sivlot, and if already the avdut ended, and you just now saw the Sforno had a hard time with that, then why? Then what exactly does it mean v'itzalti? What does Hotseiti mean?
Israel and the Midbar, they were already taken out of Egypt, and they complained, but you took us out of Egypt to die here, so
okay,
they
could
have been taken out and not saved.
Okay. But what happens instead is that then we find some sources, notably this starts with the Zohar, but you find all kinds of other sources. So when it sees the word Avdut, it understands Avdut in a different context. Avodah Zarah. Which means that it understands one as far as a physical slavery, and the other it understands as being underneath the Egyptian culture. Let's look at now, knowing that, let's look at the Sifte Kohen, source 9. V'itzalti etchem avodotam, mahu avdut, shayu ovdim avodah zarah. Right? So the avodah became very clear. The sivlot, right, it would be the pain of the slavery, but this is the avodah zarah. That's the geula, which means which is also very interesting to us. You remember we had there's four times of Geula, but only of the four types of Geula, only one of them is Geula. What is really the Geula? When were they really freed? So is it when you're no longer being abused, or is it when you're no longer being slaves, when you're no longer in a foreign land? When are you free? So he understands freedom, right? What actually is freedom? Freedom is not... Just don't say it's not... Nothing left to lose, right? That's not it. That's not what freedom is. What freedom over here is that when you see the destruction of those who abuse you, at that point they're free. Why are they free then? It's very cathartic, right?
Once they're dead,
right? Charlotte, right? That's cathartic. When you see your oppressors dying, it's good. Psychologically, it's healthy, no? Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll change my question. Right. So that's what he's understanding is geula. That's when they're redeemed. The redemption is other things like putting the fire a little lower, going from a high to a simmer. But over here, once they're out, then there's no more fear of fire anymore because now they're out. Now they're dead, and there's nothing more. What's v'lakachti? V'lakachti t'chem l'il'am. Zeh mamad har Sinai. V'kabalat ha-Torah ki l'tachlit zeh hayta kavana b'riyat ha-olam. Which means, he's not saying that's not just the reason for leaving Egypt. That's why the whole world was created. That the Jews should stand by Sinai, and we're skipping a little bit again. Kan ne'emar v'lakachti t'chem li u'bamad har Sinai ne'emar v'atem tiyu li. Right? So therefore you have this parallel of the vows taking place. The whole reason for taking out of Egypt was to take him to this mountain. The whole thing about leaving Egypt, the whole focus of leaving Egypt is, right? Lavodat Hashem, right? The whole purpose of leaving Egypt is one thing and one thing only, namely, to stand by Har Sinai. That's the purpose of it. Which means, if that's the case, then you've just now reached the culmination, and that's the end of the story, and there's nothing more to talk about because you stood by Har Sinai. V'zu gam kein hayta kavanat ha-shiabud kedei shehu meraglim ba'avdut. Because not only is that the purpose of taking them out of Egypt, but it's also the discipline you get as being a slave was the discipline which the Jewish people required in order to one day stand in front of Har Sinai. Which is, he's not only, understand, that's unbelievable what he's saying. It's not only that the purpose of leaving Egypt was in order to stand by Har Sinai, the purpose of going down into Egypt was to one day stand in front of Har Sinai.
Are you saying that you need Avodah to understand how to do Avodah
Hashem? Right. Now, from the very beginning, some of you noticed that there was another verse in Pasuk Chet from the first source. Right? You notice right there that there was Veheveti etchem el ha'aretz asher nesati. Now, as you're reading it, what did God say to tell them? God said, tell them, v'hotseiti, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti, v'heveti. That's part of the quote, right? Which means we unnaturally edit this out, we cut out the end, we cut out the last verse, and we say, oh no, there are four loshonot shel geula. What?
From when?
What do you mean from when?
What's the first source of cutting out the
geula? Anybody who quotes the other four.
Saying, does it, in other words,
Yushalmi. So we'll get there. No, but the question is excellent. I mean, it's artificial to take it out. That's poor. God said five things. God didn't say four things. So why do you say, oh, look, there's four Lashonot Shel Geula. What about the fifth one? So.
When was it decided that there are four cups of wine? Like the explanation.
I don't know. You'll see the problem in a second.
Why do we have three matzot? So they'll say Kohen Levi Yisrael.
Yeah, but you know that's
just another explanation, right? Afterwards, you need three, because if you break one, you need two for Lechem Mishnah. So
that's to keep the kids awake. Although there are those, including the Rambam, who argue that over here it's not Lechem Mishnah, it's Lechem Oni. So it's Lechem Oni. You don't have three. You start with two, and one is and then one is broken. That's Lechem Oni. You don't even have two whole ones like a normal holiday. So he doesn't have starting with three. And what happened to the Yisrael then? Yeah. You're still there.
No. It matches with what Yosef, how Yosef was sent to his brothers. You thought then, and God thought good.
Right.
He sent me here to keep life alive, whatever that is.
Right.
To keep the world going.
Correct. Listen. when you realize this is part of God's plan, it's the Brit Benim Tarim, God is making a covenant, God's saying this is what's going to happen, obviously there has to be a good, you know, reason for it. It has to be part of a larger plan. So let's continue. Let's continue. So look at verse 10. 10. After you have the four Lashonot Geula, Klom Adavim Ketiv, Kamal Lashonot Shugula, Votzeit, V'Yatzalt, V'Galt, V'Lakachti, V'Samachlei, oh, and if you open the Chumash, you'll find something fascinating. Right next to it, what does it say? V'Veiti. I'm in source 10. Lilmod lo mikre Geula Shlema, Ela B'Viyatan La'aretz. So just hold it a second. Now, we just know Sora says that you get to Har Sinai, Sinai is the highest level, and Ovi says, well, there's another Geula there, and Geula Shlema, right? There is no, this is, right, for the Zionists, right? Right? Which is, there are those who say the highest level is receiving the Torah, and that's it, you can receive the Torah in Chutz La'aretz, and there are those who say, no, what is Geula Shlema? In Geula Shlema, B'li Eretz Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik did question whether there really were four cups of wine during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, or whether there must have been a fifth for Lakachti. But you can't say Lakachti in Chutz La'aretz. I'll get there. But is there one for Haveti or not? Correct. Okay, so one second. So
part of the Geula, because you can't put Kayim all the mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz there, the mitzvot for Yot La'aretz.
Correct. Shelo yu chayavim basiyat haPesach. One second.
We know trumot masrot. We
know korbanot.
Okay. Regarding. Okay, ladies, you'll take this outside later. Regarding the number of cups and this so-called kos shel Eliyahu. If you look at source 22. Boy, it's amazing how much we're skipping today. You guys have lots of homework.
It's not the same when I read by myself.
Try with four cups of wine. Source 22. Tanu Rabbanan, Gemara Pesachim, Daf Kuf Chid Ches. This is the Talmud Bavli. Revi, what do you do with the fourth cup? Gomer Elava Tahalel. Va'omer Halel Hagadol. Divir Rabbi Tarfon. Now, the four cups of wine, each one, have their own particular purpose. I did bring you a source here that you can visualize that. In source 16, the Sefer Toda'ah, you look like the bottom of the page, it lines up each cup. Kos Rishon, La'achar Seid Brachot HaKiddush. What's the first cup for? Normal holiday Shabbat Kiddush. Kos Sheni, La'achar Agadah, V'Seder Halel HaMitzri. Which means that first part of the Halel, but that's the second cup is for the Haggadah, or the whole Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Third one, Kosh Lishi, is one after Birkat HaMazon, which is also fairly normal in terms of halakha. The fact that it fell into disuse for many people that don't drink cups after Birkat HaMazon, that one is normal. Which is, the first one's normal, the third one's normal, the second one is not. Kosh Revi'i La'acher Gamru Shel Seder HaHalel. It's by the second part of Halel, which means you all know that on Pesach night, Halel gets cut in half. We have one cup after the second cup after the first part of Halel, and you have the fourth cup after the last part of Halel. So those are the four cups. Now the Gemara over here said, "Turn up on a Revi, Gomer Lava to Halel." The fourth cup, what do? You finish Halel. The Omer Halel Agadol, and you say what's called Halel Agadol, which is all that stuff that you say at the end of the Haggadah. Did Rabbi Tarfon? Now the problem with this teaching, Rabbi Tarfon, is it's been reported in different versions by different scholars. So, for example, you look at source 5, Tanur Banan, Kos, source 23, sorry, source 23, Tanur Banan, Kos Chamishi, Omrim Alav Halel Hagadol Divri Bitarfon, which means it quoted the Gemara and just changed one word. What word did it say? Kos Chamishi. Where did the word Kos Chamishi come from? Now, this Kos Chamishi over here that somehow snuck in is found in the Rambam, it's found in the Rush, it's found in the Rif, it's found in all kinds of places. It's not found in one very important place, in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't say the fifth cup. The Gemara says four cups. There was another tradition regarding this cup, this last cup, whether it's in fact the fourth or the fifth. And there are those who obviously had, in their text of the Gemara, again, when I say it's not in the Gemara, I mean in our printed version of the Gemara, it does say four. And by the way, four makes more sense. But there were a lot of people who had in their text of the Gemara over here, they had a fifth cup. Now, there's only one problem with the fifth cup. Where in the world does it come? What's the fifth cup? Are there four cups or there are five cups? Okay, so I'll explain where the supposed kos of Eliyahu came from. Basically, what you have over here is a compromise in halacha. You have some people say four cups, some people say five cups. So what do? We pour the fifth cup, but we don't drink it. That's the compromise. So you say, but the fifth cup is for veheveti. What's veheveti? Veheveti is the future. So if it's for the future, so they say, okay, maybe the reason we don't know of a fifth cup, as I'm saying, what is the source of this whole problem? Two different versions of the Gemara, or two different ways the Gemara was reported. Four cups or five cups. So as far as we know, everything till this point always told us there are four cups, four lashonot shel gula. Now once you find that there are those who claim that there's a fifth cup, so what is the fifth cup going to be connected to? Well, you go back to the verse, we have an extra word. What's the extra word? Veheveti. Veheveti is going to go back. Now who's going to bring us back? So theoretically, Eliyahu, oh, by the way, you could have just as easily called it Kosos HaMashiach, right? Yafema'od. That may be, that's very, very nice and very sharp and may actually be the reason. But basically they had an argument and it wasn't clear who exactly did. I also found afterwards, I don't know if I... Look at the end of the Torah Tumima that we started with before, source 14. To bring into the land. Veheveti. Right, veheveti. I will bring you into the land. Could be. The greatest rechush, therefore, would be Eretz Israel, but it's a good question. By the way, before I read 14, if you want to see where I got a lot of this from, it was source 15, the Kli Yakar. He's the one who connects the Brit Bein HaBetarim together with these four Lashonot of Geula. So later on, you'll see that I don't want to give them. I told you almost no one brings it. He is the one that does, in fact, bring it. The Torah Tumim in source 14 ends up with Umashilot tiknu kos hoda'a le'inyan vaheveti etchem la'aretz, that which we don't have a fifth cup, de'ein lo mevnei she'ino me'inyan ha'gu'ula, don't say it's not part of the Geula. Rav Soloveitchik had said that. I've heard him say that. It's not part of the Geula. That the Geula is, Pesach is about leaving Egypt. Pesach is not about entering Eretz Israel. That's a different holiday. Then in terms of the four Lashonot of Geula, of leaving Egypt, all these four are about leaving Egypt, which is interesting, because then you'd say, okay, what about Har Sinai? Har Sinai is about leaving Egypt, so apparently it is. And therefore, what do we do between Pesach and Shavuot? We count all the days, because we do link them together. That is the end of Pesach. The end of Pesach is Shavuot. And the whole time is you're counting down to the wedding. And his proof is, hold it a second. Lakachti l'la'am is not about leaving Egypt, even though, as I said, you can argue. Yesh lomar pashut mnei shebeyotenu ata begalut va'aretz misura bidei zarim, because we are in galut, and the land was given to others. Eifshar lisakos yain alzeh, because we just can't pick up that fifth cup because we're not there. And therefore, the fifth cup is a hope of one day getting to that cup of Lakachti. Again, it's a very nice thing, but I'll go back and tell you the reality is that there are different opinions whether there were four cups or five cups. We ended with a compromise called Koso Shel Eliyahu. There were at least two sources that wrote about this at length. Each one claimed the other one stole it from him. One is in a book called Chokrei Zmanim from Rav Alter Hilovitz, who lived in South Africa for many years. He was Rosh Yeshiva there, and he has a whole article, and he says in a footnote, he's very upset that somebody did not attribute it to him. And Rav Zevin has a whole thing, Rav Kasher in his Haggadah, which is much more accessible, that you can all find. He has at the end of his Haggadah Shlema, he has an article called Koso Shel Eliyahu, Kos Chamishi, and you'll see there as well all kinds of sources, but the sources will end up that there was confusion, four or five, but it became for us known as the Kosel Shel Eliyahu. As far as as I said, the Torah Tumim is concerned, and there is a problem. The problem is, and this goes back to your question, it's an artificial division. How do you God said to Moshe, go back to the Pshat and Pasa, God said to Moshe five things, right? He talked about stopping, you know, the pain. He talked about stopping the slavery, which now we see is directly connected to what God had promised. We see that God spoke about taking you for people. We saw about the Geula of the Shvatim Gedolim, which is connected to the Egyptians dying. We see about taking you for people, and finally we see the Rechush Gadol, which may very well be connected to Eretz Yisrael and to the Lakachti, and finally you're going to go into your own land. For us, as I said, we poured out, and for some people it's their favorite part of the Seder. They get to say Shvo Chamatcha Al Goyim and so on. It's more kavana there than any.
Scared when we opened the door.
Yeah.
Not even that, but yeah. it's the fact that it's in brackets by Ani Hashem in the beginning and the end of these two games.
As I said, the pshat in the Torah here is that this is one unit. The kli what?
But pshat in the Torah is that it didn't happen as one unit. I mean, before the Shuwen Yomi very smoothly went out of Egypt and got up to Har Sinai, the little bit about going right into Eretz
right,
Yisrael
right.
sort of didn't happen.
Right. I did see somebody write about that. Correct.
And so there is a break.
Right.
I mean, you could say like, why is God saying
correct.
This? He knows it's not going to happen.
Even now, when we say Shema, in other words, it's, you know, we mess up, we'll get kicked out.
Correct.
Well, we didn't even go in.
Correct.
We didn't go in the
it didn't,
way
right.
intended. It should have been Har Sinai, right
correct.
Here it's Israel. Right?
Correct. So there was certainly division, but as I said, the Kli Yakar over here is particularly sharp. Just look at his comparison. And again, what I think he says is brilliant. Just go back, look at the Brit Bein Haptarim, and you'll see what God is saving them from over here is directly related to what he told them he would do in the first place.
So when they add another person,
we all do, but we all do. You want to drink from the fifth? If you want a hatter to drink from the fifth, I'll give you a hatter. I'll give you a hatter to drink from the fifth. We'll just start calling you Eliyahu afterwards.
But some Rabbanim Maron added the fifth cup at the end.
Okay, good. But now you understand why they would do that. Right. No, Bezrat Hashem, as you said, Eliyahu will come and tell us, should we drink four cups, five cups?
You didn't talk about four.
No. Shabbat Shalom.